Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
And I was nothing in the world that was doing it except me. And so I spent time finding out. I'd sit in the chair and just watch how my body would take off. But then what was amazing, what was absolutely amazing, is one day I was sitting there and I went like this. And I said, who on earth did that I know? And it was my basketball coach in high school. And he would sit like this. Watching us. And he's doing that once. I looked at him and he said, Hinkins, shower. Because I wasn't doing what he wanted, so I got to shower early. Which wasn't too bad, but it means you don't get to play the next game. And all of a sudden I got, good God, I got an imprint. So I just sit down there and pulled him inside of me, went in my sanctuary, and thank you for showing up and correcting this, and you're out of my life. But I realized, God, this guy sneaked one in on me because I had a desire so much to perform, to play basketball, that I was watching him even out of the corner of my eye to see how I was doing. Like, I wouldn't dribble the ball to see if the coach watched it. I dribbled it right. That's too much self-approval seeking, you know, to seek approval from somebody else. That's too much. Start correcting it. When that went away, it was amazing how whatever was holding my back disappeared. But I think there's somebody else underneath there. So I'm watching for him. There may not be, but I'm not going to play the stupid game that I got it, it's done, I'm finished. Because that's a stupid game. I'm playing the game of I'm watching to see who's going to show up. Is it hard for me to do? No, no harder than it is to look around the room here or watch a movie or TV or anything else. I've decided I'm not going to shut anything off. It's going to be open. In that, I get to change. Now, see, if I said, I got him, that's over, it's done. How do I account for that when it starts to happen again? I said, it's over, it's done. I'm authority in my field, therefore I'm stupid to myself, and I mess myself up royally, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep it free-flowing. See, it only works while it works. When it doesn't work, you've got to have the wit to let it go, change it, modify it, do something else. After all my years of saying that, I'm getting an opportunity to review it. The law of reversibility is coming around saying, hi, do you really want to change this? I really do. And that's the attitude you have to carry inside of yourself. It's not an unpleasant attitude. Do you people understand that? It's an awareness attitude, and one of that, God, I'm glad that I'm looking. It's like walking down a path in the forest, and there's a snake there that's deadly, and you're not watching, and it could have get you, but you watch it go, oh, wow, I could have stepped on a rattlesnake. It didn't rattle. Thank God I was watching. You watch for more snakes a lot better, but while you're watching down looking like this, a short tree smacks you in the head. Life is like that, folks. I don't know how to get out of that one except you're going, either that or stay out of the forest. But I found a better way. Go on the path where others have gone and just send your dog out in front of you. If he comes back, it's okay. And, you know, I mean, there's ways to protect and watch yourself, and that's everybody has to do that according to how you know and you see life and how you do life and how you want your life to be. Maybe no one could do it the way I'm talking about, and maybe you might say, gee, mine is parallel that. Therefore, learn from my mistake. Learn from what I learned. You're learning, somebody else will catch yours, and they'll make it shorter and shorter until we get people that are doing things very good right at the start. And your experiences of SEs, you'll talk to people and they'll say, oh, yeah, I do something like that. And they'll tell it to you and you go, God, you just told me the part I couldn't verbalize. And then you're thankful that you did what you did and that they shared with you. We're all teaching each other here. I sit up here not because I'm the teacher, maybe because I'm listening a little bit better and a little bit faster. But I've certainly done most all of it, if not all of it. And the bad news is a lot of it more than once. And this thing with the side, I don't know how many years. And so what? I'm still gonna go after it. Because you know something? And this was told to me in a psychology class by a lady who was taking the Rorschach inkblot class with us. And we were sitting there, there was 8 of us in the special class, and I was tilting back in a chair and catching my feet up under the table so I wouldn't fall backwards. And somebody said to this young guy who was like freshman, sophomore, oh, he would have been a graduate student, so he's probably first year after you get your bachelor's degree. He said, this lady said, well, how come you're in here taking this Rorschach inkblot class? And I was leaning back on the chair. She said, well, one day I looked at myself and I said, I'm going to be another day older whether I do anything or not. And I forgot to catch my feet, and I went right back over on that chair. And everybody came over and said, are you okay? Are you okay? And I said, I am really okay. And I got up and walked out of the class and told the professor, I got what I came here tonight. I got what I'm here for. I got down the car, and I thought, good God. Yeah, but I better get back because I'm there for that class. I went back in the class, and he said, what happened? You failed. Did you hurt yourself? And I told him just what I told you. He looked at me and says, we all learn a lot of things from ink blots. And I sit there and go, God, I could have missed him saying this if I hadn't come back to finish up what I committed to do. And my life has just been one of those series of events, one after another. That lady's tipped me over with her wisdom. And the professor tracked, put me back on track when I came back in to get tracked back in again. And that class just opened. I could do ink blots. He told some people, he said, this Mr. Hinkins here, I bet you if you show hand him two rocks, he can tell you all about you from two rocks. Because it didn't have to be ink blocks after that. I got it. I got what it was. There's no way to tell anybody how you get it. Once you get it, you've got it. You've got it from then on. And you can transfer it through all sorts of things if you realize you can transfer it through all sorts of things. But if you think it's only ink blocks or rocks, you're as dead now as you were when you first took the class. And so whatever you learn from me, you take and apply over in different places and all around. And if I don't say it, you say it. And if you don't say it, let somebody else say it. If I don't write it, let somebody else write it. I don't care who does it. I really care that we do it. I really care about that. And if you have to go see B.J. Castleman wrote a book, Crying and Screaming into High Consciousness, a song. You know, they took me dragging and screaming into high consciousness because she didn't want to go, but she wanted to go. And it was sort of like a JR, you grabbed me and just pulled me, and I didn't want to go, but thank God you did that. Well, if she didn't want to go, she could have left. But if she stays, that's what we're going to do. This business is soul transcendence. That's big business. That's called your eternal existence. And the other thing is who you're dating and who you're getting married and divorcing. That's all your business. That's what you create.
How can I be of greater service to the traveler's work? Called intercessory spiritual work?
Yeah, that work, the intercessory work, that was done in the Garden Tomb in Jerusalem. And we dealt with Iraq and Iran and those areas that are under oppression by the Prince of Darkness. And so it's amazing that the movement of spiritual inner awareness was called on first line. And it's really affected our bodies and our minds and our emotions and our health. And it's usually hit the left side. We do a lot of switching to the brain. And there's people who know how to work with this. It's not getting to us, but the effects of what happens over there. The war that's going on the ground is not the war. That's a game of Monopoly. The war that's going on there is going on in the spirit. A long time ago in the Bible, it was mentioned that the prince was coming to see, I think it was Daniel. He said, I would have been here sooner, but I was delayed for a week or two by the prince. Then he continued, do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. But I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. It's quite obvious. Nobody in their physical could do that. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, that's the archangel, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future. For the vision concerns a time yet to come. And we are in that time. And so a lot of you spiritually have met the archangel Michael and Gabriel and Ariel. And God, there's quite a few of them. But there's a restriction placed upon them through the Jehovah force field that they cannot do it, but they can only marshal the forces. And almost not everyone in the movement, but initiates who are in a high, who are not people who've been initiated, initiates, those people who have been initiated and are that. And we've been fighting the Orion constellation to hold it, because that's where most of the negativity is coming out of. And it's amazing. Have you ever played the game Red Rover, mm-hmm. where you grab hold of hands and there's another team grabs hold of hands and you call somebody, they try to break through? And all you do is you have to hold them. You can't let go. If you let go, they get to take somebody back to their side. And what they do is they attack, and all we do is hold them. And it really is a very powerful action. We move millions of miles looking through space, but we don't do it through space. We do it through time essence. And all we do is contain them and wrap them. And what happens when they're pushed back, they destroy each other. We don't do anything except contain. And I mean, we may be real shits here. Spiritually, we're not. And so we're trying to get the spiritual warrior of that down into here just to stand firm in your purpose. You don't have to fight anybody, get angry, upset, or nothing. Just stand in your purpose and move on your purpose. If they want to move, they'll move. If they don't, they drop aside. And you don't look back because there's somebody there who will take care of them. So that is intercessory work. There is intercessory prayer where from our consciousness here, we ask that the light be sent to the spiritual realm that is involved in intercessory work. And the messengers of light, the angels, archangels, can take that energy and confine it, hold it, and then it goes to this area and it's used as a barrier. And our prayers are exceedingly good. Now, I'll tell you, there's another group. They're called the Southern Baptist Convention. Those son of a guns can pray up a storm. And they are supplying a great deal of the force from the earth here. We can't just do it from the spirit because it's against the earth. So we have to come from the earth and give our power up to the spirit to then be used in the spirit back for the earth. If it was just a spirit, then the spirit would do it all and we'd be down here not knowing what happened. There are some people who are just, boy, when they send the light, it's a ramrod. I mean, we've all got different abilities and gifts and powers of the Spirit. And some can just speak a word, let it be done, and it's over with. And the rest of us, we have to work hard and climb up and down ladders. And it is a form of prayer. It is asking for the light to be sent. It is ministers' meetings. Or would be one of the most powerful places, theoretically, for these batteries of light to be sent into. And if your purpose is clear, like, I'm having light go there, this light is going, it's probably already on its way. Mine just went. So I may have to wait a few minutes before I get any information. SCs are designed more for you. It's a very selfish act. It's designed for you to get into the higher spiritual realms. And then it's very unselfish as you give back. We can, from the physical level, pray up to the SC level, up to your own self, up there, shoot the energy where we want it and have it effective back down here, but not for us. It has to be for somebody else. And it is effective. It is so effective that people that have had strange things on them with their life, when that light hits them, they just disappear.
How can I become more aware of who I am?
Often hurt and pain, suffering, will produce in us the awareness that we don't want that. So we turn from it and we turn to the loving and caring, and that produces who we are, or the pathway to who we are. So the pain and the suffering is always personality. And so it says you're running up against your personality or the ego desires. These things that you're dealing with also involve your husband. They're not just you with you and yourself. They're also you with your husband. When you turn from the husband as the form of loving and caring, and you, and they know it, like, hey, I'm going for the spirit. Men have a really hard time following a spiritual path being married, especially if their wife seems to have more loving devotion for the spirit than they seem to have. Seem to have, not do have. Because often women will be more overt in their emotions about it. And then when the man wants something, he's imposing upon this thing that is driving towards the spirit. And so therefore, without him knowing it, the woman closes down a section or a part of her towards the husband. He will know it. Then when he comes close to the intimacy with his wife, he'll find out that the close sexual intimacy that used to be fulfilling is not being fulfilling now because the energy is not passing through into his wife. It's just going a little ways and then returning and backing up again. And so then they look like they're going to want to be sex fiends because they're going to want to have a lot of sex, a lot of close, intimate caring to try to deliver this energy that they're carrying. When it's blocked, and the woman doesn't often know she's doing this, but the husband, by my description, he's going to say, you describe something that could very well fit that. Then I say, find another thing that it fits, and they'll be lost trying to. Then they have to either turn to another woman or to masturbation or try celibacy, which is going to be so really hard to do. Once the sexual center is open, you almost kiss off celibacy. I mean, the only thing they do is they all of a sudden become married to their work, and they work long, long hours, and they come home and fall asleep, and they're up, and they're gone, and they're work. Now, what happens then, that the husband feels that this energy isn't going across. So he then does a purposeful withhold. Why bother with her? She's busy with. And so he withholds. It's purposeful. It isn't negative. But it's like, if you're reading the newspaper, why bother her with something that she can find out about 10 minutes from now? I won't interrupt her right now. And so it just keeps withholding more and more and more until you're walking with a stranger down some path that's full of memories of what used to be, but not full of the loving that is now present. Well, that sets itself up for divorce. And a woman should, if she's going to love God, then she must love her husband with her body, mind, and soul, and through the revelation of his spirit, he'll reflect her own spiritual life back to her. She in turn reflects hers back to him, and he sees himself again as the being that he is also. Being married on a spiritual path can work as long as both people realize they both got to work the path and move together. Otherwise, it would not be too far off to say one of the members of the marriage will go off into alcohol or drugs or go rob things for an excitement. Go deal in drugs instead, maybe think they're getting caught in that excitement, flares loose the sexual energy, and they get adrenal rush, and they go, well, I'm alive, let's go. Or they'll want to deaden everything out by taking drugs. Either way, those are both escape mechanisms, and they're not really good ones. It's best that a person who's going to do drugs not enter onto a spiritual path because they damn themselves when they fall off it. God doesn't damn them. They damn themselves, and they say, well, I was on a spiritual path, and I fell off, and they take themselves down so they can be so low that when they reach up to take somebody else down, they can pull them a long way. Well, it doesn't work because often they can't reach the person unless you decide to go and save them. Then they'll pull you right down. It's like alcoholics will take down 28 other people. A good alcoholic can pull down 28 people. Have you changed your sexual expression towards your husband? He'll tell you. Have you changed how you feel inside him towards giving him loving and kissing and hugging and touching? Have you started to put other things first before you say things to him like you say, just a minute, and do that before you would do what he does? those are one of the minor indications that show big things on the way. Does he understand not to interfere with you when you're doing things that are very important to you spiritually and that you'll give him time later? Well, that's a good one. If a person understands that, it's like, hey, she's in this thing now. Leave her alone. I'll answer the phone. You can talk to him later. Now, you understand you have the desireless desire. You desire the spirit God awakening. But as soon as you desire that, since we don't know what that is, that's called a desireless desire. How do you get it? How do you know what it is? Well, I don't. Well, then it's desireless. And so then it's the questing of the unknown. And that questing of the unknown can cause you to go crazy. And it can cause a lot of erratic behavior because you will start to look for anything that would appear to be a signal, a symptom, an indication that you are reaching spirit or into God or into something. And I say, watch out for that because you're just set up for a gypsy scam or a good psychic reader to just milk you of all your money. And those people aren't at fault. They put out a vibration that they're doing this, and if you come into it, you'll pick up the vibration and follow them right back in again. It's like you're doing it. They just happen to be there to help you fulfill what you're doing. And so you have to keep bringing yourself back to that I'm keeping my eye on you, God, only you. And all these other things I look at are just reflectors back to you, just reflectors back to you. But there's a thing about being in the spiritual world that it has to be have a fundamental reality here. And that's just a loving, caring, sharing person. Those just right there, when we see that, and you do that to the people that are close to you physically, like your husband, like your children, like your mother, like your father, like his mother and father, brothers and sisters. That doesn't mean you have to go hundreds of miles out of your way to see them. It's just that when you do see them, they know that you are very glad and pleased to see them. And they get that connection. And it only has to be for a very small period of time. Like you can talk to somebody 3 or 4 minutes on the phone and they got it. Usually, children with parents that talk 2 or 3 times a week on the phone, even long distance, are very close. Because that on the phone few minutes takes place. Now, I know that with you and your mom, you talk a lot and you're close. And you may not talk that much to your dad on the phone, but your mother tells him, and he talks to her, and so he gets a phone call. See, so he's still in the warmth of what it is. And you may even not feel that at times, but he is. Yeah, I'm saying that you may not feel that at times because maybe just talk to your mom, and there may not have been anything said about dad as, you know, like a big thing. But he's still in there with all that. Marriage is big, big business. And people that I know, I always tell them, take care of your marriage. And if I see they're not, if they're a close friend, I tell them, you're not taking care of it. And I'm really serious. Like, you're running out of gas in your car. Go fill it up. There's 200 miles before the next gas station. You only got 20 miles left. Stop and get gas in your car. It's a serious thing like that. I tell people, take care of it. But since in marriage, you don't know when the gas tank is empty, say, always keep it topped off. Go take care of that person you're married to. Do what is necessary to take care of them. Be there, even if you don't know what it is, that if they ask for something, you can be there. Pretty soon, they'll stop the taking. Because sometimes in a relationship, we got to take a lot in order to know what's going on. And then we can give back. Marriages aren't equitable. They're not equal. We don't come into them equal with anything equal. We come into them just seesawing up and down, and once in a while we match. Then we go, this is what I married for. And then the other 99% of the time it's going like this. This life is to be just devoured. Really, it's to risk it all, because at some point you're going to die. I think we have a quote in our new book that says, I do things 3 times. Once, to overcome the fear of doing it. And the second time, I do it to know what it is that I was afraid of, to see what it was like. And the third time, I do it to see if I really want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to get out there and do that. You have to risk the hurt to risk the loving to get the joy. If you're saying, I don't want to be hurt, you'll do nothing to go for joy. If you say, I don't want to share, don't share. It won't happen. Whatever you want, and I'll tell you this, there's 100% sharing possible between two people. Because always numbers are reduced to the common denominator. 100 here, 100 there, 200, reduce it, it's 100. But if I do 100, I really won't matter what you do anyway, because I'll have a joyful relationship with you. But I might be oblivious that you're not having a good one with me. But if you're smart enough to do 100% and I'm doing 100%, then there's the overflow and everybody around says, God, I'm glad you guys are together. It's really neat to be around, watch you do things and have fun if you're doing your percentages. But what if you only have 40% to give? That's all you can give. But you give 100% of that. It'll be the same as somebody who has 100% to give and only gives 60. You'll still match them, but there'll be inequity someplace in there. And so you have to watch that some people are inhibited and have genetic disturbance patterns and psychic patterns and karmic patterns that aren't going to allow them to flow the way you might like them to flow. If you can know that, you don't have to like know the situation, the karma, but just to know that this person's working under a karmic load, something inside of you has a great, great compassion. And that compassion heals. And you just say, I understand. And I choose not to be involved in that. It's not that I've decided I'm not going to do that anymore. It's just I choose not to be involved in that. The other person doesn't hear it as a condemnation as much as, well, maybe next week you'll feel better and choose to do it. And that's entirely possible. But it's really very important that you always stabilize your own beingness to your own purpose and finding what your purpose is and then finding what your goal is and seeing somebody who might have a similar purpose and the same goal is really a great relationship.
Beirush Beshem.
John Rogers' closing words were Beirush Beshem, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.